Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast, co-starring 10-year NBA center Ryan Hollins.
Couple pump fakes leads in, shot blocked by Ryan Hollins. Hollins sent that into the third row.
6 rebounds and 8 assists.
Oh! Hollins climbs the stairs. Down the floor. Ryan Hollins, he is the high jumper.
That's what I want to see. Give me some gunpowder and throw the hammer down.
And now, here is your host.
Might send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to another episode of Bucher and Hollins, subsidiary of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. I'm Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1. You can read me on Bleacher Report, and you can follow me on Twitter at Rick Bucher. He is Ryan Hollins, NBA vet, star of screen and radio. You can hear him, you can hear him on Fox Radio with Chris Broussard. You can see him on First Take, Second Take, Third Take, everything ESPN has. You can see him, you can follow him on Twitter at the Ryan Hollins and on Instagram at Ryan Hollins. All right, it's been a minute, Ryan. A lot has happened, but I am just back from Las Vegas and the Summer League, and so it got me to thinking, I was there from the very beginning, the Vegas Summer League. How much Summer League did you play? You were drafted in 2006, correct?
Yeah, I was drafted in 06. I came out for Summer League.
In Vegas or Salt Lake, or where were you? Or
because there was back then, we were Orlando.
Yep.
We were Orlando, and we didn't do Vegas. And for those who don't know, the guys, NBA teams would either go to Orlando or go to Salt Lake.
Right.
Because they didn't like the crowds. And they always felt like it was more of a practice environment and there was no nonsense. But the team started to realize, go to Vegas, because if these idiots can't deal with the casinos and stuff here,
yeah,
how are they going to deal with the NBA life?
Yeah.
So let them go out and let them party. They're going to cut themselves. And, you know, you kind of know who a guy is from a young age. And, you know, Summer League has turned into like a real event, Rick. Like, remember, it was a joke.
Yeah. No, the first year of 2004, I think it was, there were 6 NBA teams. And I think there were agents that put together teams that were like their free agent guys who just wanted to be seen. And Warren Legarry, who runs or at least started the Summer League, needed teams to fill it out because, as you said, there was a real sort of anti-Las Vegas sentiment among the teams that were serious. Orlando, you know, you didn't have any fans. They didn't sell tickets. Salt Lake City, you did, but it was Salt Lake City. Not that many people came in. It's basically a local crowd coming to check it out, and you'd have 4 or 5 teams, and you could always tell, like, the like-minded teams, all the serious teams on the East Coast went to Orlando, and all the serious teams out West or Midwest, San Antonio, Salt Lake, they would all go to Salt Lake City and play in that. And then now Las Vegas is just taking it over. I think in part because of what you said. I also think it's the owners like coming out. And that's become a thing now. Like, all the owners come and hang out, and you have the Board of Governors meetings in Las Vegas, and it's just become a place. It's And it's actually taken away from what it was for me from a media standpoint, because I used to be able to sit in the stands with any GM or coach, and you'd hang out and you'd watch a game, you'd watch more than their game, and you could just talk about stuff going on in the league and gain a lot of information. And now everybody kind of is they got to meet with their owners and meet with their teams, and they got practices, and so they only come in to watch their games. And then Warren, since it's on TV, wants them seen, so he puts them courtside. And it's just really changed it. And this year, more than anything, brought that home to me.
That's an interesting component, because for those who don't know, a lot of deals get done at Summer League if they aren't already done prior. But any and everybody is there. And you said, you'll have owner, you'll have general manager, you'll have president, coach, scout. I mean, everybody's in the building, and you would think, oh, just these rookies, and sometimes not even these rookies are playing. These are free agent guys, but it's a real serious event where everybody goes to. And it used to have like a bad stigma for guys who are in the league, like, why am I going to Summer League? And now everybody, like, you're not somebody if you're not going to Summer League or even being seen.
Yeah. No, now the vet players come through to be seen sitting courtside.
Yes.
Right? Everyone wants to do the stroll, coming in and then sitting courtside, and the cameras are on them. LeBron, Chris Paul, you name it. The one guy who did play, who's a vet, and I got to look and see how many years he has in the league, Cameron Payne was playing for the Mavericks, and he was playing angry. And I don't think he was helping himself, to be honest with you. He came down and he hit two threes in a row in a close game, and he was MFing Kyle Guy, who he was matched up with. And Rick Carlisle is sitting courtside. And you know Rick, I'm thinking, Cam, you're showing, I mean, he was playing so angry, and not angry like I want to beat everybody. It was like angry, I can't believe I have to do this, and I'm playing Summer League at this stage of my career. And they ended up losing the game. And I just felt like, dude, if you are serious about making the Dallas Mavericks, you are not behaving in a way that's going to impress Rick Carlisle. Rick Carlisle is not down with all the histrionics. And I don't know if Cam was aware of that or if he cared.
No, I mean, a lot of these kids don't have the correct mentorship behind them. And you got to understand, when you got 15 guys fighting for one spot, if one spot, because some teams just elect to not use it, or some teams may have two spots potentially. You got 15 guys fighting for one spot. I'm trying to find a reason to weed you out. And if you hadn't realized, the competition level isn't that far off. And now, Rick, what I'm seeing that's kind of drives me crazy is the draft picks don't play.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out why that is. And you've gotten to the point, Rick, where these guys play a half of a game or two and then they're done. And I even remember, you know, the first two or three games, you would have second and third year guys coming out and playing.
Right.
And I don't know if it's Vegas. I don't know if they're scared of injuries. I don't know if they don't want them to look bad at this time of year, but I just have a real problem with kind of just not playing. I was always just raised to just, hey, play as much basketball as you can.
Right. So Cam has played four seasons for three different teams, but he was a first round pick, man. He was the 14th pick by the Thunder. So I understand why he feels the way he does, but dude, you got to be able to put that behind you and just say, hey, I'm still trying to make a career out of this, and I got a chance to do it. And I look at his skill set, and there's no reason why he can't. There's no reason why he can't play in the league. I don't know if he's a starter. I don't know where he is. But if he really took the right approach, there's no doubt that he could find a place.
Yeah, but there's, like we said, Rick, there's no difference between, you know, that 15th spot and you know, if you're not going to make or break my roster, I'm going to go with the guy who's zero headache. And I don't know what the kid's like off the court, but you got to be careful about a message you portray or who's in your camp telling you what to or not to do.
Or, you know, if you've been through a couple teams already and you're getting dinged by Oklahoma City and Chicago, John Paxson is a respected guy. Sam Presti is a respected guy. If they're moving on from you, then that's a red flag for a lot of other teams. And I can see where Dallas would take a flyer at him, but I can also see where Rick Carlisle would go, I've seen enough. So we'll see ultimately where it goes with Cameron Payne. You're so right though about how challenging it is and how much people make out of summer league, and I think more so now because we got all 30 teams there, we got 20,000 people showing up for certain summer league games. A guy has a big game or even a big showing, and it's suddenly this guy can play, and it's summer league. I mean, it's still a different. Like the guys you're playing against, the vast majority of them are not going to be in the league. Now, speaking of which, you and I have talked about this, but I really got to get your take because you and I were like-minded about let's slow our roll on Zion Williamson. And you and I have not spoken since, at least not for the podcast, have not spoken since he had his brief debut. What did you see? What did you think as a result of what you saw from Zion in that first look in that first summer league game?
At this point in his career, he is what we thought he was. He doesn't have a position quite yet. The reason I define that is because he's not tall enough to be a center, even though he can weak side shot block with the best of them. If his timing is on point, and his footwork, shooting, and ball handling isn't refined enough quite yet to be a wing. And now in today's NBA, you're either a five or you're a wing. You're running the 3-point line.
Yep.
Or possibly you can, get with a guy and you can play like a Draymond Green type of role. But that means you're in a perfect system. So he still needs guys to create shots for him. Now, hats off to David Griffin. He spent money on J.J. Redick. He kept Jrue Holiday. He's putting Brandon Ingram's there. Lonzo Ball, perfect addition. He's putting guys around Zion that can get him the basketball rather than just having him in a on a depleted roster. And this roster is 10 times better than what Anthony Davis had. Now, obviously, Anthony Davis was traded for half the roster, which beefed it up.
Yeah.
But you've set the stage for Zion to kind of catch and finish. He's an elite finisher right now as far as just going, jumping, and getting up, and that's not in question, Rick. But I don't see a position yet, but I love the way the kid competes, dude. I don't think there's any kind of Hollywood in it. You know, we kind of talked about guys not playing. Like, if it were up to him, he'd play every game.
Right. What do you make of the fact that he was clearly out of shape?
I don't blow that. I know Seth Greenberg said that, during the game, and he was right, but it's so early in the year and he's so young, it's not a big deal. You got to keep in mind. So a guy like myself, I was drafted 50th, but I literally had 13 or 14 NBA workouts. And this was like six workouts in 7 days, like flying, fly, fly, workout, fly, workout, fly, workout. You know how many Zion workouts he probably had? Let's probably say one or two where he shot.
And the lightest of workouts.
In the lightest for the number one pick. And he shot jumpers and he dunked the basketball possibly and he lifted some weights and did some tests. You know what I'm saying? So that he hasn't had to compete. He even saw that for a little bit with like Lonzo Ball. And I believe he was a little out of shape, if I'm not mistaken, during his actual Laker workout. And that was kind of a buzz going on. But once you know you have your timing or your draft spot secured, you're not going to see the same level of competition. And it's smart because you don't want to get hurt before you get signed.
Well, that's why I believe that's why they shut him down more so than the knee injury was serious. It's that, you know what, we're going to risk hurting this kid because he's not in shape and he's going to be out here and there's going to be a bit eyeballs on him. And I think what you saw in that first game, he was trying to dispel all of the questions about his game. And all he did was confirm them. You know, shooting the three did not look good. Airball to mid-range off the dribble. It's like, my feeling was, and I said this in the last podcast, just do what you do best right now. Work on the rest of it behind the scenes.
Don't you feel like he kind of adjusted as the game went on and just said, forget it?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, certainly he was dunking the ball and he was, you know, what they were running for him too.
I feel like the gear switched Rick kind of a little bit and it was like, you know what, just go dunk.
Go dunk. Yeah, which he did. We're doing this through the prism of the number one pick and all the high expectations. He didn't rebound the ball particularly well. It's what we've talked about. There is so much growth that has to happen. I like the kid's personality. I think he's, everything I've heard, the work ethic is there in spite of that he wasn't in shape. But he's young. He's just really young and he has a really young game. And so I just want to, I was actually more impressed with the Pelicans' next two picks, Jackson Hayes and Nickeil Alexander-Walker, than Zion in terms of where those guys were picked and what they showed. Jackson Hayes was electric. Now, again, it's summer league and he had to wait because of the machinations of the trade. And so he had to sign late. He didn't play at first. So he was gung-ho when he got out there. But man, he showed, in spite of his build, that he can finish with contact. He's very agile. I don't know how much you saw of him, but he impressed me, liked his demeanor, liked everything about him. And Nickeil Alexander-Walker is a wing who I can see being in a rotation right from the start. Shoots the three, can defend his position, can handle a little bit. It's the Pelicans scored at least three, and they say four. They like their fourth round pick too, played over in France. I think it was France. Didi is the kid's name. He was their second round pick. That's his nickname. But I thought the Pelicans did well, but I like their deeper picks than it's not just all Zion. I'll put it that way when it comes to this draft class for the Pelicans. Did you see any of Jackson Hayes? How much do you know about him? Because he reminds me a little bit about you and the.
I knew you were gonna say.
Well, he does. He does. He is a high flyer.
The dunk that he had, they compared it to something I did. One of my dunks when I jumped over Blatch. That was funny. But the thing about him is the kid has potential. And not just his potential, he has a position.
Yeah.
You know what he is.
Yeah.
He's a rim roller. He's a finisher. His game is defined. And you're not questioning that. And what's tough is if I'm going to get the most bang for my buck out of Zion, he's going to be playing the center spot, or my five is going to have to be like a Brook Lopez to space the floor so he can roll down the middle.
Right.
And that becomes an issue. And for a while, it was an issue with Anthony Davis where Anthony really, you know, picked it up and refined his game. But Anthony Davis was really effective, highly effective as a roller. And you had to play him with Ryan Anderson. What happened is Anthony Davis didn't want to play the five. So on the defensive end of the floor, he'd get abused down there. Now, since he's put on muscle, he knocked down three balls, he's really, really developed. So you hope that Zion, his work ethic turns into his skill work and his footwork. But I do love the way the kid works his tail off.
Well, there's a lot of work to be done for him to develop the jump shot or a three-point shot. That we're not going to see that this year. That's something that he's going to have to work on next summer.
Live at the game, or were you there live at the game, or did you miss that one?
Friday, I was at home, so I did not experience that earthquake. I experienced an earthquake earlier in the week in L.A., but I didn't experience that one. So, and I'm trying to think, by the time I got there, there were no more earthquakes. So I was there, I got there on Sunday and stayed until Wednesday. So I'd been in LA all week doing TV. I needed to come home, and then I took my son with me for the first time, which was great because for as jaded as I might be about Summer League, having done you know, 14 of these, and this is number 15. Experiencing it through his eyes, he had a blast. It was like the first night we came back to the hotel after watching games all day, and he's like, "Dad, we got to do this every year." I'm like, "You know what? Let's wait until we get to Wednesday."
well, you know what too? For him, those aren't young, boring guys. Those are him. As a young kid,
yes,
I'm gonna relate more to the summer league guys and the rookies than my guys, and that's why. If you remember a guy's rookie year as a young guy, he sticks with you forever.
Yes.
I couldn't relate to like Sam Perkins and Otis Thorpe and those guys or Elijah. I related to Kobe and Shaq. They were me on the floor in my mind.
Sure. Well, and he also, he's followed a lot of these guys from high school to college. And so he had a book on more players than I did. He was giving me some background on some of them. Yeah, it was good to have him there. He was like, "I want to see this guy, and I want to see this guy, and I want to see what this guy does." And
maybe he can start the new hipper, younger version of Bucher and Blackman and Hollins.
Yeah, well, he and I did a podcast. We did a Bucher and Bucher from Vegas.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah,
that's cool, man.
It was a lot of fun. Cool. I tried to get him to do another one with me, and he was like, "No, Dad, I really don't want to." I was like, "Oh
my God,
break my heart, man." Okay, fine. We're not gonna give you a second run. All right. So some of the other news coming out: big blockbuster trade catches a lot of eyeballs, and that's obviously Russ Westbrook going to the Houston Rockets in exchange for Chris Paul, a couple future first round picks, and it's exciting, and it ratchets up the interest even more so in the Western Conference in particular, and in the NBA in general, because I would imagine that Chris Paul is still headed someplace else, whether it be, I've heard Minnesota, I've heard Miami. There's no way that Sam made this deal not knowing that he's got a place to move Chris Paul onto, but let's focus on just the Houston end of things with Westbrook joining forces with James Harden again. It's funny. I sent out a bunch of texted a bunch of my contacts around the league just to get a feel for like what's their reaction to this. And nobody, player, scout, GM, personnel director, nobody on any level was thinking that this really moves the needle for the Houston Rockets. I was amazed. It was across the board. Now, there's probably like five or six people that I checked in with. And so certainly it's not, you know, a unanimous by any, or, you know, widespread poll. But nonetheless, what do you think of the fact that I got that from so many different places? I got the same reaction, which was, they're just rearranging chairs. I don't see how two ball dominant guys, how this is going to be any different than what it was the last time around.
Well, I believe it is going to be better. But the way that the Lakers and Clippers have loaded up, it doesn't excite you the same way. And we have to hark back to the loss of Trevor Ariza. And that was such an emotional X's and O's, just a big loss from Houston that they hadn't recovered. And I'm optimistic they'll be better. I believe that the whole league should be on alert from what they're going to see from those two guys. But I don't necessarily put them as contenders. And it allows James to be a playmaker. And I believe these two guys are coming back to the table with unfinished business. Westbrook actually being traded, and James Harden has to be looking himself in the mirror at his legacy without the same excuse that, "Oh, we would have run if Chris Paul was healthy." And I'm not saying that James personally made that excuse, that, you know, what the hell does the regular season mean, these awards, if I can't get it done in the playoffs? And now the West seemed like it was wide open, but he's got some help that he hadn't had last year. And Chris was good the year before, but Chris wasn't too good this last year.
It's interesting that you say that James Harden is going to be the playmaker, because that means Russ Westbrook is going to be off the ball. And
I think both.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Both. I think you'll see both.
Well, that's the challenge, because that's where, look, physically, Westbrook is in a place right now that Chris Paul has not been for a couple of years. And maybe at his best was not what Russ Westbrook is even now. But Russ is hard to play with and figure out what he's going to do, because he doesn't always know what he's going to do until he does it. And Chris is a little more predictable, so you know where he's trying to get to and where you should be as a result. And that's where I wonder if they are indeed going to be better, or how much better.
I mean, Chris has to play the two-man game with Capella to get a shot off, to get to his mid-range. You know, he doesn't have a choice. Let me ask you this, and it's going to lead me to my next statement, but I want to see how you feel first. Do you attribute Russ's playing style, or lack thereof, or the question marks, to Russell or to Billy Donovan and Scotty Brooks?
It's certainly a combination. I mean, he hasn't had... I mean, this is the yin and the yang when you have somebody like Russ who can dominate athletically the way that he does. Have they tried to make him play within a system, or found ways to utilize him in more complex ways than just take off or play ISO ball? I can't answer that. And I don't have a track record for Billy or for Scott to say that they run offenses, that this was Russ not being able to conform or not being willing to conform. I don't know that, but I do know that, and I've always been a Russ fan. I defended him when the whole KD, I from the very beginning, when KD was still there and people were blaming Russ because KD wasn't getting enough shots or whatever their shortcomings were, I defended Russ.
Answer this real quick, and I think this has been glossed over. When KD left, everybody, darn near everybody in the media, massacred Russ. And even when Paul George just recently, they said, no one wants to play with him. This was foul. And now Kendrick Perkins kind of broke the news and confirmed the news that Stephen A. Smith said that he was told that Kevin Durant was staying. They met and it was all good. And Kevin Durant goes a day later and changes his mind. So he ends up telling Russell via text. And Russell never told that story. Stephen A. Smith had to tell it. A couple other guys had to confirm it. And Kendrick Perkins confirms it. But Russell just shut his mouth through the process. Does that change your view of him at all? Because he had been seen as this guy, it's a horrible tag that nobody wants to play with.
No, because I never thought that was the case. I mean, KD, the way he left, And I knew that he had texted him. That's how he said goodbye. I didn't know the part that Russ thought he was coming back, and that was the first revelation that KD wasn't. I would say KD basically did the same thing to Golden State, so I believe the pattern. That said, I didn't fault Russ for KD leaving. Sometimes guys, and in part because KD was never really honest about where their relationship was.
True.
So I thought, you know, Russ, look, KD was what, a four-time leading scorer in the league in Oklahoma City. He was a league MVP. I'm like, how is Russ holding him back? And I saw KD in many instances have the ball and miss with the game on the line or turn the ball over or make mistakes as much as I saw Russ. Russ simply was, KD, if you're not going to be aggressive, then I'll go. I'm going to go. I'm not going to wait to see if you're going to be aggressive. You get the ball. If you don't go and I get it back, I'm going to go and make something happen because I'm confident in that. This is what's changed for me when it comes to Russ, is that I think he's a victim of his own athleticism. Whereas other guys that don't just have that blow-by speed or can stop on a dime and rise up and hit a mid-range jumper and you can't contest it, is that he's never developed the decision-making of, if I get a step, I'm going to survey everything and then I'm going to make a decision. He gets a step and he's going all the way to the cup. And if he gets challenged at the cup, now I'm looking for my second option.
And Rick, for me, that's where D'Antoni's system is going to help. Reason number one, he's never had a team that spaced the floor and spread you in on the three-point line and shot it effectively. That's what Houston does. For two, it's, I don't want to say organized chaos, but it's organized. It's almost like a secondary break they play in.
Yeah.
So what do I mean by a secondary break? If I come down and run a play, there may be multiple screens to a certain action, a post up, a pick and roll, whatever it may be. But when I say they run a secondary, these guys run the spots on the floor and they essentially read and react rather than just having to have either fast break or a set. And everything is predicated on getting in the paint, driving the basketball and kicking out, which means Russ is going to be downhill. And now you got to pick and choose whether you're going to help or not. And this is a guy who can help out James Harden. James Harden, there's a stat. At some point during his scoring tear, he scored 263 unassisted. Do you know the wear and tear that that puts on your body?
Sure.
I mean, that Russell Westbrook, who's, let's say, and argue me if you must, is the best guard in the NBA at rebounding and the best at assisting the basketball. So that means he can get a defensive rebound, push full court, and make easy opportunities with the spread floor for James Harden, Gordon, Capella, any of those guys.
Well, he's led the league in assists, but I believe that some of that is because of the rebounding, and because once he takes off, he's either scoring, he's taking a shot, or, I mean, this is the foundation of all the triple doubles, is that he's rebounding the ball defensively. Then he's leading the break, and on the break, he's either scoring or he's kicking it and somebody's scoring. And as a result, on multiple possessions, he's filling two of the categories, assist, scoring, or rebounding, two of the three on multiple possessions, which is why he gets so many triple doubles.
But Rick, I tell you from a coaching standpoint, it is ideal, and it's always been preached for my guards to rebound the basketball, and now we're out.
Yeah.
And even, you know, Golden State, when they're at their best, whoever gets it would just go, whether it was Iggy, whether it was Dre, whether it was Steph, and then those guys filled lanes. Steph wasn't coming back crying for the ball. He would fill a lane and go get a bucket. Now, obviously, we're going to be interested to see how that dynamic winds up in Golden State, but if you imagine that with Houston, now their pace gets up, and now James Harden is a guy who had to pace himself through games. He literally couldn't sub out. He has help, and Chris Paul wasn't help as much as you want to say he was. This last year, he wasn't help, and I'm not going to go as far as say a liability, but he couldn't handle the same load that he once did.
Yeah. No, and when you say filling a lane, I mean, I think of more running to spots, because filling a lane, I think you're right. Yeah. You're looking for something going to the basket, and that's not what happens anymore. As soon as guys are going crossing half court, they're looking for a spot behind the 3-point line. It will be interesting to see where this goes, and they do have something to prove. What I found interesting, I went back and I looked at how much those two played together in Oklahoma City. And the first 2 years, I mean, first of all, Harden always came off the bench. And generally, he came off when Russ was going out. Like, he played more with Ibaka and Nick Collison and KD than he did with Russ. It wasn't until the last year that he was second in minutes with Russ to the minutes that Harden played with KD. So there is some, it's not as if they have a history of being on the floor together. Back then, it was really a separate thing. So it'll be interesting to see exactly how much familiarity they have and where it goes.
True.
Very quickly, I'm on record as saying that after all of the moves between the Clippers and the Lakers, and I know you bleed red, white, and blue, but I believe...
Stop it, Rick.
You do. I believe...
No, I do not.
Yes, you do. I believe that it's okay. I mean, look, there's... You know, I don't know if it's Steve Ballmer's signature on the check, but look, I get it. I get it. It's okay. But nonetheless, I believe that the Clippers are the better roster right now. I'm a bigger believer in them, just from a chemistry and fit standpoint, than I am with the Lakers. Lakers have an impressive list of names. I don't know how well it's going to work. Are they going to be better? 100% they're going to be better. This is a much better roster for LeBron. But I don't think that they're better than the Clippers right now.
Let me throw something back your way. And by the way, I objectively agree, not just from a paycheck. Rick, you
scoundrel. It's shocking that you agree with me on this.
Oh, my gosh. But let me ask this. You are very familiar intimately with the Lakers organization. Mm-hmm. Who's in power there?
LeBron.
Okay. Fair. That's the first thing you say. And you are familiar, very familiar with the Clippers organization. Who's in power there?
I am going to say, well, that's interesting because I would have normally said, and my first name that came to mind was Doc Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'll stay with that, although he doesn't have the same personnel control, obviously, when he was wearing both hats.
Yeah. So we'll say personnel control, whatever it may be. But you know Doc Rivers.
Yes.
If you're thinking Clippers, you're thinking, hey, we're making a hard decision. Who's playing what minutes? Who's doing whatever? Doc Rivers.
Right.
The fact that you didn't even – I don't even know if you blinked. I don't even know if it ran through your mind, Frank Vogel.
No.
I don't know what is the first thing you think when that name comes to term.
How long does he last before Jason Kidd takes over?
How long does he last? And if I'm going to look at these two rosters, and maybe let's just say the talent is a wash. Let's just say these guys are. We don't know who's going to be what, but on paper right now, both these rosters are stacked. Okay, and I look, and I know when I got to figure out. Who's the starting five? Who's on the floor? When Doc Rivers says, you know what, Paul George, take a seat for Montrezl Harrell. We're playing a different lineup.
Yeah.
He does whatever he may be doing at the time and fixing and plugging and finding stuff. That's going to be what it's going to be. When it comes to the Lakers, you got a lot you got to figure out.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And that's
the
edge that I give.
And
it's coming back to haunt them. That they did not get Tyronn Lue, Rick.
Yeah. Well, and they have a couple of big personalities there who are probably going to have to play roles. And how is Frank going to handle that? Now, I will say this. I ran into Frank at Summer League. And it was Frank and Al Gentry. Met them, ran into him outside the locker rooms, or in the tunnel outside the locker rooms. Frank, if he's stressed about this situation... He is not showing it. He is giddy and excited about being the Lakers head coach. And it is, that's sort of his personality. And we'll see where that goes. But I really like him. He's just a good guy. Do I think he's cut out for this challenge? Hell no, I don't. And I hate saying that, but look, I have to be honest.
Why is he not cut out? Why is he not cut out? You're at a, why is he not cut out?
Because he is not a confrontational type guy. Just for the same reason Mike D'Antoni would be a terrible coach for LeBron James. Because you have two passive-aggressive type guys. I need somebody. I need somebody who's like, going to stand up.
Let me ask you.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this about LeBron.
Yeah.
There's kind of an unwritten thing I don't know that we've seen, or I don't know, I don't want to call it a rule, but just kind of an understanding, better yet,
yeah,
that LeBron responds well, even better, to an older African-American coach. And we've seen that kind of through history. Do you? And I'm not saying that LeBron does not like Spanish coaches, Filipino. Like he won with Eric Spoelstra. Okay, so that's a,
yeah, but he tried to back him up.
We're not going
to
make this about
he tried to move him aside. Yeah. That was one of the first things he tried to do.
Very true. So do you believe that LeBron would have responded better to a Tyronn Lue or eventually a Jason Kidd or Lionel Hollins? Do you think that ultimately is going to be the final say?
I do believe that those guys would work. Jason comes in with an established respect factor from LeBron. I would hope that Lionel would too, in much the same way Paul Silas did in Cleveland, his first head coach. The problem is that those guys are assistants, and if we're saying, you know, at some point they're going to make a switch, well, okay, so when are you going to make the switch? And whenever you make the switch, it throws everything kind of sideways, because now you're going to go through this process of Frank Vogel is not LeBron's guy. At some point, a change is made to what? To appease LeBron. Where does LeBron. That put everybody else on the team? How do they feel about it? And you don't have, I don't think you have like the young guns, like that really doing that with guys like Lonzo Ball and Kyle Kuzma for the first time, that clearly shook them. I think these vets, if that happens to Danny Green right or Jared now, Dudley, they're not gonna they'll be fine.
I agree right now. If I'm gonna go back through history and look at LeBron teams and what he's done well with is they've always surrounded him with professionals, a pro's pro, guy who's in early, out late. Whether he plays 5 minutes or 40 minutes is going to be ready.
Yep.
We just named off Danny Green. We just named off Jared Dudley. We just named off Rondo. A number of those guys that are filled. They're oozing with them in the locker room right now. Mm-hmm. And the only young guy there is pretty much, you know, Kuzma, and it, you know, KCP is mature beyond his years. So nonetheless, they've taken this Cleveland model and brought it to LA.
Yes.
While everybody's loving that. And it's important why, Rick, as I'm coming full circle, LeBron still has a level of immaturity, kind of nonsense that he likes to get away with during the regular season, where he gets kind of loose with his accountability, and he knows how to turn it on when playoff time comes and when he's needed there. But it's almost like, here's my crutch. Here's the guys I can lean on. Here's my James Jones, my Mike Miller, my Richard Jeffersons, you know.
Yeah.
While I kind of do my thing. And if I do some nonsense, they're going to have my back. But when I do it around these young guys, see, these young guys don't understand. When I, LeBron James, want to take a playoff on defense, Brandon Ingram, you don't take the playoff.
Right.
Lonzo Ball, when I shoot out an Instagram post, you don't shoot out an Instagram post. Like, there's stuff for me and there's stuff for you, young fella.
Right.
And those guys didn't get it yet at this stage in their career, but the Rondos, the McGees, those guys have it.
Yeah.
And that's why you really love that roster for the yin and yang approach. And even LeBron understands it, man.
Well, this is the question that I have, and we'll wrap on this, is this is the real question for me, because you're right. They are building a team that fits the profile that LeBron has won with in the past. It also fits the profile of teams that haven't been quite good enough in the past, in that where are those vets on their timeline? And what's most curious to me is, are these guys, how much do these guys have to help LeBron at this stage? And how much can LeBron still be the dominant factor where he makes the game easier for all of them? You know what I mean? LeBron, at his height, it was, all I need is floor spacers. I'm going to make the game easier for you. I'm going to get you easy shots. We got enough. I mean, the question I have is, how well are they going to be able to defend with all these older guys? And so that's what I don't know. I don't know where LeBron is after that injury last year. Was that the beginning of the decline, or was that just a blip on the radar and he goes back to being what he's been, which is practically invincible?
I believe it's a blip, and I've had a groin injury before, and I believe they overrested it. It took a little longer than I would have expected, but I believe they overrested it. And, you know, Clutch Sports and LeBron want to make it a point to get Luke Walton the heck out of there because maybe they didn't listen to him before. Do I have that documented? No. These are just my opinions. Why did LeBron hurt his groin, and why do I think it came about? It was the Christmas Day game.
Mm.
And, you know, he could have just taken a private plane up later. But I tell you one thing, during Christmas, as regimented as LeBron James is, maybe he stayed up a little later than normal. Maybe he broke his diet. You know, he missed a stretching or therapy session for Christmas Day. And then when he flew up, you know, the jet lag got him, or he hadn't stretched, or that routine was off for a second.
Hmm.
I believe that's why LeBron got hurt. And then I believe the drag it out was kind of a bit of a power move because, hey, Luke wasn't his guy. And it's not that Luke is a bad guy, and it's not that there's a problem, but they weren't in agreement with the way, and I've heard this, and not from LeBron personally, but the frustration was that they were letting the young guys do whatever they wanted to do.
Hmm.
When they got on the floor, they were too free, and they wanted Luke to be a little more strict. And by the time he got into it, it was too late.
Interesting. I do know that there was a point which I was told that he was delaying the return, trying to push for J. Kidd to come in and replace Luke, and that ultimately did not happen, and then they went through the postseason machinations. But I find it interesting. Jason Kidd somehow, some way, ends up on the bench and appears to be a head coach in waiting after all is said and done. And I think he would have been there even if Ty Lue had taken the job, if I'm not mistaken. I believe, I'd have to go back and check my notes, pretty certain that Jay was amenable, even if Ty took the job, that he'd come in as an assistant coach to be the coach in waiting, just in case that didn't work.
And Ty was just saying, all right, well, give me four or five years or whatever. And they couldn't commit to that. And I believe that was the beginning of the end. And that's the one wrong that they couldn't right in this process. Even with Magic Johnson, and everything had seemed to have gone beautifully of late, you know, the roller coasters, you know, and that's putting it lightly.
Yeah. All right. Before you start singing the praises of Magic Johnson again, we're going to wrap this up because we got enough of that on the
that other
podcast that we did. This does it for this episode of Bucher and Hollins. Wherever you get your podcast, iTunes or wherever, please rate the show. Thank you to all of the hundreds who have already. And if you want to be eligible for some prizes, just screenshot that review and send it to @BucherFriends, and you will be eligible. In the next podcast, I will once again be joined by my man, Will Blackman. Keep in mind, we have gone to a 3-day-a-week schedule for the podcast through the rest of July and August. And so we're going to try to be consistent on our days. Just know we're going to be out 3 days a week. Which 3 days? That may be a little fluid as we deal with vacations and whatnot. But in the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.